We're holding on page Samach Aleph in Nedarim, a few lines into Ois Chof Beis. Since the subject of the Perek has been the case of Mudr Hanah Mechaveroi, the case where a person makes a neder that the other person won't have Hanah from him, or he won't have Hanah from the other person, or both, so the Mishnayos and the Perek have been dealing with the various details, what are such people allowed and not allowed to do for each other. So, for example, before we learn about what he's allowed to teach him, he's allowed to teach him Mikra, but not Mishnah, and that led us into a whole discussion about the details, about certain details of the transmission of Torah and the Masorah and so forth. So now another Mishnah mentions that in a case like that, then he wouldn't be allowed, he's allowed to be Mevakeh Chola, but only standing, not sitting. So the Gemara goes through a couple of explanations why that should be so, what's the difference between standing and sitting. The Gemara goes through three or four explanations, but then now the Gemara picks up with a piece of with Samagadta on the subject of Bikur Cholim. Amr of Shim ben Lakish, Remez the Bikur Cholim in Atorah Minayin. Where is there a hint in the Torah for the concept of Bikur Cholim? Now, what you do have, the Gemara elsewhere explains that you have, as a posset, the Gemara brings in Bava Kama and in Bava Metzia, that you have in last week's parasha, you have where Yisroi tells Moshe, he tells him, as part of the advice to appoint judges, he tells him, Vaydaita lahem, you should inform them, as a derech yelchuva, the way on which they should go, that's a master asher yasun, and the deeds that they should do. And the Gemara in those places explains that each phrase in that posset is hinting, that half a posset is hinting at a different thing of Gmilas Chasadim that Moshe has to teach the Jewish people. So the Gemara mentions there that Yelchuva means to go and do Bikur Cholim. However, that's not a very clear source. It is a source in the Torah for the concept of Bikur Cholim, but we want a clearer source, a clearer indication in the Torah for such a concept. Which, by the way, I mean, there were before the Rambam, there were various svarim that enumerated the mitzvahs, and some of them enumerated it as a separate mitzvah. The Rambam was the first one to point out that no, it's not really a separate mitzvah. It's counted as part of the mitzvah of Gemilas Chasadim. It's a general mitzvah to do Gemilas Chasadim, and this is part of it, and pretty much all the Morneah mitzvahs after him followed suit. Anyway, so where's there a remez in the Torah for it? So you have in the story of Moshe and Korach, Moshe says, "Im kamois kala adam yimusin eila." If these people, Korach and his group, die like most people do, "Uf kudas kala adam yipoked aleihem," and the remembrance of all people is remembered, is brought upon them. Lo Hashem shlochani, then Hashem has not sent me. So in other words, we're saying, "Uf kudas kala adam," hints at Dikur Cholim. So the Gemara says, "My mashma," where you see from the words of Kudas Kala Adam, Yipoked Aleihem. What does that have to do? What does that tell us anything about Bikur Cholim? So Omar Rava, it means because Moshe is saying, "Im kamos kala adam yimusin eila." If these people, Korach and his group, die like most people do, shem cholim umutu umutolim amitosam, where a regular person is usually sick and then bedridden for a while before he dies, uvnei adam mevakrim oisam, and people come and visit them. So the ufkudas kala adam, the word poked has the shurish pokad has several different meanings. One of them is to remember. One of them is to remember. So, of course, kol adam yipoked aleihem. So, like this. In the simple pshat in the pasuk, we would understand that kodas means the fate of all men, the fate of all people is going to come upon them. But here we're understanding that kodas kol adam means the fact that other people come and remember them and then come to visit them. So Moshe is saying, if they die in a natural death like that, where they're sick in bed, they're shivana, and people come and visit them, maha brias omrim, then what are people going to say? Lo Hashem shlocha yo shlochani lozen. And people are going to say that Hashem obviously didn't send Moshe, because otherwise Hashem would have stood up from Moshe's covered and caused that something unnatural happens to them. But then Moshe continues, and on the other hand, if the ground opens up and swallows them up, then you'll know that they were upsetting and angering Hashem, and that what I did and that everything I did that they're arguing against is true. So we see from these words of Kudas Kol Adam Yipoked Aleihem that it means that he's saying if people visit them. So who would be the people who would say Lo Hashem Shlochani? So Ma'al Shav Britain's on the face of it, and we're saying Ma'ah Brias Omris Omrim Repashus would be the people who visit them. The people who visit them while they're sick would be saying, you know what? If you're dying a natural death, then it must be that what Moshe was saying is not true after all. Ma'al Shav Britain's actually from the Medrash that says that when Moshe says Lo Hashem Shlochani, he's saying actually he's almost like putting a challenge down in front of Hashem. If you don't do something to demonstrate very publicly that they've acted wrong wrongly, then I myself am going to deny that you sent me. Now, how could Moshe say such a thing? Actually, the Shalach HaKadosh points out about that. He says, when you think about it, you have all the various Nevi'ei Sheker in Tanakh. What does it mean? Did they wake up one morning and decide, I'm a Navi? No, it means they genuinely thought they were getting Nevuah, but it turns out they're getting from Kochas HaTumah. They didn't realize that they're not getting from Kedusha. So Moshe is saying, now, if you don't do something over here, then I'm going to start second-guessing myself also, and I'm not going to be sure whether everything that I received all this time was truly from the Edishter or otherwise. So therefore, in other words, he's almost like putting down a challenge in front of Hashem. You have to do something about it.
Hashem did what he wanted.
And Hashem indeed did. And Hashem indeed came through, and the ground opened up, etc. What's the connection of Korach and his people's challenge and with Bikur Cholim? That Dafka, we have a remez to Bikur Cholim over here. So there's a couple of different points that that Meforshim say about it. So Ben Yehoyada says a point like this. He says, you know, what's the, later on, the Gemara is going to point out soon during the sugya that if people visit a chola, they help take away some of his illness. Now, how does that work? Is because all Jews are connected. Koi Stola Raven Zelazen. I mean, they're Raven because that has to do with mitzvahs, whatever, but all Jews are Koima Achas Shlema. Well, Korach is claiming that he's standing up for that. Call Eder, call him Kedoshim. What makes you think you can lord it over everybody? You're not better any than them. So Moshe is saying, let's see. You know what? If really Korach is being motivated by Avat Yisrael, then you'll have Taka that there will be people that you'll see that there will be Bikur Cholim with him and his group, and you'll see that Taka Avat Yisrael is able to happen over there, and they help take away their illness. But if we see that not, if the Eidrish prevents that from happening, then you know they weren't motivated by Avat Yisrael in the first place. It doesn't specifically say anything about cholim over there. Here, no. Of course, means, in other words, we're saying the remembrance of people, that people will come and visit them. In most kolodim, most in Ela, of course, kolodim. So we understand, in other words, we're talking about the kind of remembrance, the kind of thing that people remember them before they die, and they come and they visit them. So we do have more of a remez. We do have more of a remez there over there. There's different other points as well. Iyun Yaakov actually does connect it with the fact that Hashem visited Avraham Avinu, and he makes a connection over there. That therefore we see that now we can learn from that. But you could say, listen, maybe Hashem is showing extra nivus in front of Avraham, and Avraham is even sitting when Hashem is standing. But then Moshe says, well, now wait a minute. If you see that Hashem is not standing up for the from my covered when it's necessary in order to show Korach and his people and to show the whole Jewish people once and for all that Korach is wrong, then people are going to say that, you know what, Korach maybe has a point, that maybe the honor of a tzaddik is not as important. And therefore, that's another connection between Bikur Cholim and Korach. Kli Yoker on the Pasuk makes another point as well. When people come and visit a sick person and afterwards the person passes away, people take a lesson from it. People say, you know, we can learn from that we should do tshuva. Mashenkin, when you have, because everybody figures, listen, you know, eventually we know the same thing is going to happen to us, so we better do tshuva before we become sick and so forth. Mashenkin, when they're swallowed into the ground, people are less likely to learn tshuva for themselves for it, because they're going to say, listen, how often does it happen that people get swallowed in the ground? So therefore, the Kli Yoker says, that's the point. Moshe is saying, if they die a natural death, and that gives people, therefore, the opportunity to visit them and to have hirhur tshuva, well, then it shows the Eved Shekol is something good to happen through them, so it shows they're not such bad guys after all, and maybe they do have a valid point. But if the Eibishter makes it, they're going to be swallowed up into the ground, such that people are not even going to learn a lesson from them about themselves doing tshuva, then it shows they really are out and out Rishoyim, ad kedekach, that Hashem doesn't even want that people should have thoughts of tshuva because of them. That's the Kli Yoker says that. Several different explanations about what the connection is between Bikur Cholim and this particular story. Well, the Gemara continues, Dorash Rava, my dichtiv, what does it mean? It says in that connection, Moshe said, the next pasuk, Moshe says, the imbriya yivra Hashem. If Hashem creates a creation, so what is Moshe asking for? What is Moshe asking for over here? Moshe is saying, imbriya gehenem mutav. If gehenem has already been created, then good. In love, but if Gehenim has not yet been created, yivra Hashem, then Hashem, please create it on the spot now so that it's available for them to fall into. So the Gemara asks, Amy, is that so? How could Moshe even have a suffix whether Gehenim was created yet? Of course it was created. Valtanya, Shiva Dvarim Nivru Kodim Shinivra Olam. There were seven things that were created even before the world was created. Now, the Ran gives an explanation over here that it means that the Eibishter already planned to create them before the world was created, because the world won't be able to manage without these seven things, as we're going to go on to say. On the other hand, some of the Mefarshim point out it can't really be that it just that Hashem planned to create them, because then still you'd have some Moshe could say, okay, Hashem, you planned to create Gehenim long ago, but you haven't gotten around to it yet, so please get around to it right now. No, we have to say these things were actually created already. As Marsha points that out, that besides which we have other Gemaras that talk about, there's Gemara in Pesachim that's relevant to this, that talks about that the space of Gehenim was created at one point, and the fire of Gehenim was created at another point. So therefore, so obviously we mean that they were actually created, not just that Hashem planned to create them, not just that Olah B'Machshava, like the Ran says. Anyway, the Elohim, they are as follows. Torah, so each of them, the Rashba gives a whole explanation over here, and the Mechaber of Ein Yaakov expands on it in his introduction to Ein Yaakov. Basically, he explains each of these seven things that we're going to list is necessary in order for the world to function the way that the Eibishter planned. So the first one is Torah. There has to be a Torah in order to tell us what to do and what not to do. The Rashba goes into a bit of an arichus over here. The fact is that you have a human being is unique among all the Nivroim that are down here on earth, that he has seichel like the Malachim. So that's the part of Nasa Adam Tzalmenu. So therefore, there has to be some way. He's an Eved of Hashem. There has to be. He needs to have a Torah in order to know what to do and what not to do. And therefore, the Torah had to be created before the world in order for the world to be able to work. The Gemara is going to bring Pesukim showing each one of these. Utshuva, then there needs to be the ability for tshuva, that if a person doesn't do what the Torah says, that there should be the possibility for tshuva, had to also be created before the world existed. Gan Eden v'Gehenim, there has to be Gan Eden for the tzaddikim to be rewarded, and Gehenim for the Rishoyim to be punished. The Kisei HaKavod, Hashem's throne, which represents, in other words, the fact that the Eibishter's Shechina is able to be in our world. The Rashba also gives an explanation that Kisei HaKavod refers to the heavens through which we have they're above our Olam HaTachton, and with that we're able to get some perception of Hashem through that, so that's all included in Kisei HaKavod. Or Beis HaMikdash, there has to be a Beis HaMikdash, the place where the most perfect place where Hashem's Shechina is revealed. And HaKosev explains also that after all, the Beis HaMikdash is meant to be also the ultimate place for a person to connect with the Eibishter, to daven to him. Even now, after all, we daven in the direction of the Beis HaMikdash, no matter where we are in the world. So therefore, that concept had to exist before the world was created. And the last one, Shmo Yisrael Mashiach, the name of Mashiach, meaning not Mashiach himself, he's a boss of Adam, but the concept of Mashiach had to exist before the world was created, that there's going to be the one who brings about the ultimate purpose for which the Eibishter created the world. So we see that one of these things is Gehenim. So now the Gemara brings Pesukim to show each one of these. Torah, Dichtiv, the Pasuk says, the Torah personified, speaks of herself, and says, Hashem kononi reishis darkoi, Hashem acquired me at the beginning of his way, kedem mif'olav me'oz, before any of his deeds, before any of his creations, back then. So we see that the Torah comes before the world. We have the idea that the Torah was written in, the Maharsha brings from other Gemaras, that it was written in black fire on white fire, so it's the primiest of the Torah. Tshuva, dichtiv, b'terem horim yulod, Rav Gomer. The Pasuk says, before the mountains were born, before you created the world, toshev enesh adaka, you bring mankind back to being crushed, v'tomer, and you say, shuvu b'nei adam, people, do tshuva. So we see, b'terem horim, before the mountains were even created, the Eibishter is already saying, shuvu b'nei adam. Maharsha also explains that specifically what it means is who's the Toshev Enesh Adaka. So we have the Gemara and Chagiga that we learned a while back that mentions that there were 974 generations of humanity that were suppressed, that weren't brought into existence. The original plan was that the Torah would be given after 1,000 generations, Dovet Sivala Elefter, but the Eibishter saw that the world is not managing without Torah for that long, so therefore we had to move things up, and the Torah was given after only 26 generations, and Moshe Rabbeinu is the 26th generation from Adam. So those 974 were suppressed, Huntu, as the Gemara puts it over there, and they were never created.
They were never born.
Well, the Gemara says that eventually the Neshamas were distributed throughout the generations, and they're the Azeponim, they're the brazen-faced people in every generation. In Chassidus, it talks about the idea that those are Neshamas from Olam HaToyhu, who have, as we know, Toyhu has a much greater intensity and a much greater power, but it needs to be channeled in the appropriate way. It needs to be channeled in Olam HaTikun, so those are those Neshamas. In any case, Marashal says, Toshev Enesh Adaka means Hashem took those generations who we saw are destined to be Rishoyim, and they're not going to be able to do tshuva properly, and therefore, so now he says, Toshev Enosh, Hashem crushed them and prevented them from being born, and then you have the actual, the regular humanity who are capable of doing tshuva, and the Eibishter says to us, tshuva b'nei Adam. So therefore, we see that the whole concept of tshuva, and they were born, the 26 generations, and everybody after them, right? Okay, so we see that the concept of tshuva was created before the world. Next, Gan Eden. Dichtiv vayita Hashem alekim gan ve'edem nikedem. The passage says Hashem planted a garden in Eden nikedem. Now, in the simple sense, we might say that nikedem means on the east. However, Marashah points out, and that say it would say bikedem, which would mean in the east. Mikedem means from kedem, so therefore the other meaning of kedem is primordial, the original thing before. So we see that Gan Eden was planted and before anything else, before the word. And the Maharal also, by the way, has a long complex piece of explanation over here in Chedrusha Agadis. One thing he points out is that Bechlal East is very much related to the concept of before, like it's the beginning of everything, in the sense, for example, the sun rises from there, we see the sun rises in that direction, for example. But he also has a long Arichus explaining the Bechlal, and we're saying seven things over here. He explains, like this, you have everything that we see around us in the world is bounded by time and space. So before the Eibishter started creating those things, he had to create seven basic things, because you have, when you think about it, there are seven basic directions: up, down, right, left, forward, backward, and the center. Those are the seven, and therefore corresponding to those, the Eibishter created seven things that are, and he explains, everything else that's in the world, not only is bounded by time and space, he says everything that we see around us is a compound of various things. Everything that we see around us, a compound of different atoms and different whatnot. Each of these seven things is not a compound. It's a thing. It has a pshitter state. It's not a compound, and therefore they have to be created as prerequisites for everything else. And he goes and explains Barichus how each one of them, it's one unitary thing, and not made up of different parts like everything else that we're familiar with. Anyway, so that's Gan Eden. Gehenem dichtiv ti'oruch me'esmul tofte. The pasuk says tofte is prepared from esmul. Now, tofte is a nickname, the Gemara mentions elsewhere, is a nickname for Gehenem because it's related to the word to the word pitui, like the fata ish in this week's parasha and other such psukim that means to be seduced, to be talked into. So a person who allows himself to be seduced, to be talked into and convinced by his yetzahara to do avedus winds up in Gehenem, and therefore Gehenem is called tofte in a pasuk. So when it says it's prepared from esmul from yesterday. So it means that it was created on a day, the only day in history of which we can say it had a yesterday, but not a day before yesterday. Every day that we think of, there's a yesterday and there's a day before yesterday. But the second day of Maaseh Bereishis, it had a yesterday, because there was Sunday of Maaseh Bereishis, but there was no day before yesterday, because the Eibishter hadn't started creating time yet. So therefore, so it means that Gehenem was created on the second day. Marashah mentions that that's why it doesn't say Kitoriv on the second day. And therefore, when it says over here in the Gemara that Gehenem was created before the world, Marashah says what it means is before the third day when V'seiroa HaYabosha, we can consider in a certain sense. In one sense, the world is created beginning on the first day of Vayomer Elokim, Yehi Ur, and Bereishis Bara Elokim and all that. But in another sense, we can say, before the world was created means before dry land came to be on which humanity can live and make a din of a tachtonim. So therefore, if Gehenem is created on the second day and dry land on the third day, then we can still call it Kodim Shenivra Olam. With that said, also there is that Gemara in Psochim that talks about that the space of Gehenem was created before the world, and then the fire of Gehenem was created on the second day. So there is reason to say that actually even some aspect of Gehenem itself exists before the Eibishter B'chlal started creating the world. Kisei HaKavod, where do we see that Hashem's Kisei HaKavod exists before the world? Dichtiv, Nochen Kisach HaMe'oz. Your seat, your throne is paired from then. What do you mean from then? From before there was even a world. Beis HaMikdash, Dichtiv, the passage says, Kisei HaKavod Morem Merishon, the throne of Hashem's glory, the one that's exalted from the beginning, Merishon, and Rishon doesn't mean, can mean first, it can also mean preceding. There's Gemara in Pesachim that points out, for example, when it says Barishon, that on the first day, but Ach Bayem Rishon, Tashbisu Sorem Batechem, you don't get rid of Chametz the first day of Pesach, you get rid of it Erev Pesach. So we see that Rishon sometimes means preceding. So Merishon, preceding everything, Mekoy Mikdashenu, the place of our Beis HaMikdash. So we see that the place of the Beis HaMikdash is prepared before the world even existed. Marsha points out that actually in Pesachim, where it also brings the same list of seven, then it explains actually you don't need a separate pasuk for the Kisei HaKavod and for the Beis HaMikdash, because this very pasuk itself has both of them. It has the Kisei HaKavod and it has the Beis HaMikdash. And the connection between them is because the Beis HaMikdash down here on earth is connected to the Kisei HaKavod Lamaila. So that was created before the world. And the last one, Shmo Shamashiach, Dichtiv, the Pasuk says, Yehi Shmo La'olam, may his name be forever, Lifnei Shemesh Yinoin Shmo. Before the sun, meaning before the sun was even created, Yinoin is his name. Now the simple meaning of Yinoin means his name should last. It's Meloshon Nin V'Neched, which means descendants. His name should last from generation to generation. But here the Gemara, there's a Gemara in Sanhedrin that says one of the names of Mashiach is Yinoin based on this Pasuk. So here we're understanding that it means, even though in context, the pasuk, even in context, the kapitel is talking about Shloimeh HaMelech. It begins with Shloimeh Elokim Mishpatecha L'melech Tein, kapitel Ayin Beis, but the last few psukim of it in particular are talking about Yemos HaMashiach. Marsha points out, we learned at the end of Ksubas, the Masechta before this one, we learned about the psukim over there, Yirash Kalavon and Piryo, Yatsis Meir, Ke'ez of Aretz, that refer to Yemos HaMashiach. So therefore we can understand that this Pasuk Lifnei Shemesh Yinoin Shmoi is also referring to Mashiach. And so it means that the name of Mashiach is Lifnei Shemesh, is even before the sun, even before the Eibishter brought the sun into existence. Marsha also points out an interesting thing in this connection. We have the Gemara in Bava Basra that tells us that Asidim Tzadikim Shi Koru Al Shmoi Shal HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Tzadikim in the future are going to be named after the Eibishter's name, meaning that they're going to be able to bear the name Yudke Vovke, just as Hashem himself does. There's many, many pages in Chassidus that explains what exactly that means. But in any case, the point is, here what we have is a substitution where instead of the haze of Hashem's name, we have nuns. So therefore, instead of Yud-Ke, Vav-Ke, instead we have Yud-Nun, Vav-Nun. So it still represents a form, so to speak, of Hashem's name, where Mashiach is not yet, he hasn't yet called B'Shmoy Shalom HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but he's halfway there already, so to speak.
Why do you replace the Nun, the Yud for a Nun? Because
so it's that we replace the Hay with a Nun. One thing is, Hay and Nun do kind of go together. There's a system, one of the systems of transposing letters in Lashon Kodesh, the same way as you have Atbash and you have various other methods. There's one method called Atbach, which is we pair up the letters that will make powers of 10. We pair up Aleph with Tes, Beis with Ches, Gimel with Zion, and so forth. And then similarly, we pair up Yud with Tzadik, Chof with Pei, etc. Now, in among the units, Hey is left over. Hey will pair up only with another Hey to make 10. Nun is also left over to Nun, plus you need another Nun to make 100. So therefore, so in that system, Hey and Nun go together. So therefore, so here, Hey can be substituted for Nun, Nun can be substituted for Hey using the system of Atbach. That's what it's called. Atbach, Aleph Tes Beis Ches. It's a system of exchanging letters from one another. It's used. Gemara mentions it. It's used in Kabbalah here and there. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, so we see that all these seven things are created before the world. So we're back to what does Rava mean that Moshe is saying, if Gehenim hasn't been created yet, then Hashem, please create it now. Moshe knows already that it's been created since before the world.
What
Rava means is what Moshe meant was Ivrila Puma Hocha, if the mouth of Gehenim has already been created over here, Mutav, then good, then Korach and his gang can fall into it. The Eloi, and if not, if the mouth doesn't exist yet, Yivra Hashem, then Hashem should create that mouth. So the Gemara still, what does that mean? Hashem is supposed to create something out of scratch. There's nothing new under the sun. During Sheshes Mei Bereshis, the Eibishter was creating Yesh Me'ayin. After that, he doesn't. So how can Moshe be asking for? And in fact, Marshall says the Gemara could have very well asked this question on the original version of Rava's statement that actually that Moshe is asking that Gehenim should be created. Not only is there the question that Moshe should know that Gehenim was already created, but also En Kol Chodesh Tachas Hashemesh. But here, now that we're saying that Gehenim is already created, and the question is to create the mouth, then the question is that. Fine. Hochi kama, what Moshe means is I hochol and mikra puma, if the mouth of Gehenim is not right here in where we are in the desert, mikra, then let it be brought close to here. Now the Gemara mentions in Eruvin that Gehenim has three openings, and one of them is in the midbar. So Moshe is asking, if it happens to be right here in the midbar where we are, then good, and if not, then Hashem, please bring it over here. That's not creating something new, because the mouth already exists, and the Eruvin is just bringing it, and it is just bringing it closer. Maoshah points out that now Maoshah's Gusa did not have the word Hocha that we have in parentheses over here. So Maoshah wonders, in the previous question, besides the question that Ein Kol Chodesh Tachas HaShemesh, why didn't the Gemara ask that we know from Pirkei Avos that Pi Ha'aretz was one of the things created during Erev Shabbos Bein HaShemashes? But now, if we have the word hocha, as we have over here, Etz Yosef points out, then there's no question, because then Moshe is saying, I don't know whether there's a mouth over here, but I know there's a mouth somewhere in the world, but if so, then please create one over here. And the only question is, Ein Kol Chodesh Tachas HaShemesh, and the answer is that Moshe is not asking that. He's saying, I know there is a mouth for Gehenim in the desert, but just please, Hashem, if it's not over here, then please bring it over here. So in this connection, Dora Shrova, Va'amilor Omer of Yitzchak, my dichtiv, what does it mean, a posik in Chavakuk, we have it in Haftarah, the second day of Shavuos, Shemesh Yoreach Omad Zvula, sun, moon, he stood Zvula. Now, there's a number of questions. Why Shemesh Yoreach? Why not Shemesh V'Yoreach? Why Omad in the singular and not Omdu? And the main question the Gemara is going to focus on is Zvula, is Zvul. The Gemara tells us in Chagiga, there are seven levels of Shemayim, and Zvul is not the one where the sun and moon are located. The sun and moon, the Gemara tells us over there, are located in a heaven called Rakia. We have Rakia as the general name for the heaven, like in Parshas Bereishis, but then you have specifically, there's Viloin is the lowest one, and Rakia is above it, and then you have various other ones going higher and higher. Rakia is the fourth one. So the question is, Shemesh Yireach b'Zvul my bow. What are the sun and moon doing in Zvul? They're located in Rakia, which is the second heaven. So what are they doing up in the fourth one? So the Gemara is going to explain that this pasuk is referring to what was going on at the time of the story of Korach. Now, why would we assume that this pasuk is referring to that episode of Korach? On the surface, the psukim are talking about over there, and this is how the Mefarshim on the psukim learn that that pasuk is talking about in Yeshua's times, when Yeshua told the sun and moon to stop during one of the battles with the Canaanim in Vayidim Hashemesh V'Yireach Omad. So many of the Mefarshim on the pasuk explain that this pasuk in Habakkuk is poetically referring to that story. So they stood in their place in Zvula in the heavens and didn't move. So why is the Gemara assuming over here that it's referring to the story of Korach? So there are a number of explanations why that is. One of them is, so the Ran brings one explanation is, the previous psukim there in that parish, in that perek, in Habakkuk, are talking about Yitzias Mitzrayim and Kriyas Yamsuf. Then you have a posik that says, Mochatzta Rosh mi Beis Rosha. You crush the head from the family of the Rosha. So now we're understanding that that refers to Korach, and then after that you have this posik, Shemesh Yireach Omad Zvola. Therefore, the Gemara is assuming that this posik is telling us of something that was happening during that quarrel between Korach and his group and Moshe. Then you have, the Rif points out another explanation is, another pasuk in that perek says, Nosan tahoim koloi, the depths gave forth their voice, Roim yadehu nosa, they lifted up their hands on high. So that means there are two things over here. The people are getting swallowed up into the ground over there, and Nosan tahoim koloi, when they're falling into the tahoim, they're sure screaming, so therefore Nosan tahoim koloi, and the Roim yadehu nosa refers then to Moshe, who's making a shvuah over here and saying that Hashem has to show who's boss over here. And then uh, and um, So, so you have different psukim over there that hint at what's going on. Eitz Yosef points out another point. The pasuk says over there, Tevaka Oretz, the ground split open, which describes what happened perfectly by Korach. In any case, for all these reasons, the Gemara is assuming that this pasuk of Shemesherech Omad Zvula is referring to the story of Korach. So the question is again, what are they doing in Zvul when they're located in Rakia, which is two heavens further down? Means melamed sh'olu shemesh v'yadreach mirakia l'zvul. The sun and the moon actually came up from Rakia to Zvul. V'om yulafonav, and they said to the Eibishter, the Bnei Shlalem, im ata oseh din l'ben Amram, if you're going to judge and you're going to bring about judgment on behalf of Ben Amram, on behalf of Moshe Rabbeinu, and vindicate him against Korach and company, then we will continue to shine. The imlav, and if not, then we're not going to shine anymore.
What is vindicating me?
Means, like, in other words, to justify what Moshe is saying against Korach. So if you do that, if you show that Moshe is right, then we're willing to continue shining. And if not, then we're not willing to anymore.
So this is
the sun and the moon are saying this. Why are they doing this dafka in Zvul? Marsha points out, the Gemara says in Chagiga, when it explains over there what the function of each of the seven heavens is, it mentions that in Zvul, there's a Mizbeach over there, and Michal is bringing Korbanos over there. Tosfos mentions over there that he's bringing the Neshamas of the Tzadikim as Korbanos to the Eibishter. There's many, many places in Chassidus where it talks about what that means. But in any case, the point is that therefore it's the place of the Korbanos. Well, what's one of Korach's arguments against Moshe and Aaron is that Aaron has taken the Kohuna Gdola for himself where he doesn't deserve it. So therefore, Sadavka, they're going to Zvul, which is the place of the Korbanos Lamaila, and complaining to the Eibishter. Zvul based on the Shayim. So they're complaining and saying that Hashem, you have to do something. You have to vindicate what Moshe is saying. Otherwise, we're not willing to shine anymore. Now, why not? The Rashba explains because the whole purpose of the world is that there should be people in it and that they should be serving the Eibishter. And we said before, the Torah is one of the seven things that was created before the world, because without the Torah, the world has no reason to exist. So now, the sun and moon are saying to Hashem, listen, Korach and his people are trying to argue against Moshe. They're trying to argue that Moshe's Torah is not true. Well, in that case, then, the world has no reason to exist. And in that case, why should we continue shining on it? So that was their argument. The Maharal makes another point as well. He says that the whole movement of the sun and moon, he says, is based on the Eibishter's midah of din. The fact that they're in constant motion and constant regular motion is because of the Eibishter's midah of din. So therefore, that's why particularly they're saying that you have to do a din on behalf of Moshe Rabbeinu. Well, but so Hashem at that time started throwing arrows and spears at the sun and moon. Like, in other words, he gave them an unimpeachable argument against what they're saying. He says, look at this. Every day, the goyim are bowing down to you. Some worship the sun, some worship the moon, and you still continue to shine. So all this time, you never stuck up for my covered, and you never threatened to withhold your light because people are worshiping you. And now all of a sudden, you're speaking up in honor because of the honor of Boss of Adam is at stake. So therefore, like the Eibishter is, so to speak, shooting arrows and spears at them, like, you better go and do what you're told, whether you like it or not, because if you didn't, then why didn't you bring up anything all this time? So the Rashba explains, in other words, the Eibishter is telling them essentially the same argument that we find in Masechta Avodah Zarah. The Gemara tells in Avodah Zarah that there were some Goyish philosophers who one time asked the Chachamim, you know, if Hashem doesn't like, if you say that Hashem doesn't like Avodah Zarah, so why didn't he destroy it? Why didn't he prevent it from existing? And the Chum tell him, listen, you know, you have people who worship the sun and moon. Should Hashem destroy his world because of fools? So therefore, they continue over there and say, well, should destroy the idols that aren't necessary and leave the ones that aren't necessary. And the Chum explain why that wouldn't work either. But the point is, so now the Eibishter is saying essentially the same thing to the sun and moon. Listen, just because there are fools who worship you, that's not a reason to stop shining. And you yourselves recognize that because you haven't stopped shining until now. So what makes you think that all of a sudden, because Moshe Rabbeinu's covered is at stake, and the covenant of his Torah is at stake, that therefore that you should that you should stop shining? No, you can't. I'm going to shoot spears and arrows at you and force you to do your job. So so from then on, every day, the Eibush has to, shoot spears and arrows at them in order for them to continue, shining. Shenemar, as the pasuk continues, that same pasuk in Chavakuk, after Shemesh Yerech Amad Zvola, the pasuk continues, La'urchitzecha ya'aleichu, they go by the light of your arrows, L'noigach brach chanisecha, by the gleam of the flash of your spear. So like again, so to speak, like they only go, they'll only move, because the Eibishter is forcing them with spears and arrows, in other words, with this argument, that you have no choice, you have to do what your job is, and don't worry about what people are doing down here, Lamata. Marsha points out in this connection, you find an interesting thing. When Korach and then his people first come to Moshe with their arguments, so what are you, Vayishma Moshe, Vayipal Aponav, so Moshe falls on his face, and then the first thing he says to them, Boiker v'yoda Hashem es Asheloi. In the morning, Hashem will make clear, well, who's really his. Who's really his? Who Hashem has really chosen? So Marsha explains, Moshe is thinking like this. He knows what's going on in Shemayim. He knows that as soon as Korach and company have come with their arguments, that the sun and moon are coming with this complaint to the Eibishter and saying, why should we continue shining if people are going to be doubting Moshe? So therefore Moshe thinks, you know what, very likely Hashem is going to listen to their argument. In that case, tomorrow the sun may not shine. Well then, Boiker, in the morning, V'yoda, then you'll see very clearly, the sun won't shine, and therefore you'll see that the sun and moon are sticking up for me, and Hashem is accepting their argument. Comes the next morning, and the sun did shine. So therefore, then Moshe realized, okay, it must be, as we say in the Gemara over here, that Hashem didn't accept their argument. He says, then in that case, you should have argued all this time when it's the covet of the Eibishter at stake. And therefore, Moshe says, fine, bezois tedun. Fine, we weren't able to know before by the sun not shining, but bezois, with the following thing, tedun, you'll know once and for all that what I'm saying is the truth, namely, that you're going to get swallowed up into the ground. So that's why he's saying bezois. What do you mean with this? Means I already thought there was going to be something else, but that didn't work out. But now you're going to see with this that now it's going to happen, that the earth is going to open its mouth, etc. Then you're going to see once and for all that Korach and his people are wrong. In fact, Rashi mentions on the pasuk that Moshe tells them, you know, do you think you can turn day into night or night into day? No, the Eibishter set up rules in his world when there's day and when there's night. In the same way, the Eibishter set up that there are certain people who are chosen for certain tasks and Aaron is chosen for the Kohen Gadol and so forth. So that all fits with this, that the sun and moon are threatening to change things, and the Eibishter tells them, no, it doesn't work that way. Eon Yaakov also connects it with the sun and the moon bowing to Yosef. We know that Yosef was the greatest of his brothers, and he personally went to bury Yaakov, and his reward for that was that Moshe, who was the greatest person in the Jewish people, was involved in finding Yosef's bones and bringing him to Eretz Yisrael. So Yosef had the sun and the moon bow down to him. But now Korach is arguing and saying that maybe Yosef wasn't any greater than his brothers. The sun and moon bowed down to him. Big deal. That doesn't show anything. So now the sun and the moon are showing that no, that's wrong. It is a very big deal, and therefore we're going to stand up for Moshe's honor. And the Eibishter tells them no, it doesn't work that way. So then a couple of the Mephoshim point out that you have other nuances in the pasuk. Like we said, why does it say Shemesh Yoreach, sun, moon? Why not Shemesh V'Yoreach? And why Omad in the singular? Why not Omdu? So we're saying, in other words, because the Mizr... So Eitz Yosef explains, the main thing was the sun was making this argument, but the moon is a makabel from the sun, so therefore kind of like it went along for the ride. If the sun is not going to shine, the moon is not going to shine either, so therefore that's why the Loshen Yochid, because the sun that's taking the initiative in making this argument. There's an explanation related to that also, that Bechlal, the sun and the moon are the prototype in all of history of the concept of Mashpia and Makabel. Korach and company are arguing against that concept. They're saying there shouldn't have to be a Mashpia and a Makabel. Kula Eder, Kulam Kedoshim. We can all be equally Mashpia. We don't need to be Makabel for Moshe. Which is why the sun and the moon are making this argument, saying that in that case, what is our relationship as Mashpia and Makabel have to exist? And the Eibishter explains to them, because that's how it is, and I'm going to show, I'm going to demonstrate that in fact Korach and company are wrong, and the concept of Mashpia and Makabel is embedded in the way the Eibishter created the world. We say Aleinu by Kiddush Levana. So one reason is, so one reason. What? So one reason is actually because since we're saying a tefillah in front of the moon, we don't want it to look like we're worshipping the moon, but I guess you're probably asking, you're probably saying something else in connection with this gemara, yeah? Right, and Pnei Moshe, Pnei Moshe, Pnei. Yeshua is a makabel, right? He's Pnei Levana, that's true, right? Moshe is Kipnecha, Moshe's face was Kipnechama, Yeshua's face is Pnei Levana, good. I don't think I've heard of that yet. The official explanation I've heard is because we don't want to make it look like we're bowing to the moon, like we're worshipping the moon, and therefore we say Aleinu to say absolutely not, we worship the Eibishter and nobody else. Yeah. Okay, you know, Shivan Panamato, yeah. Okay. Yom Yom Mashiach Gola. Today is, what is today? Your test, Tavis.
Yeah.
You have in Pirkei Avos, you have the expression that the Rebbe Omer, Ezi Derech Yishara, what's the straight way that a person should choose for himself, something which is Tiferes Lo Yisrael, but Tiferes Lo Min Adam. So the Rebbe talked about this and connected it with the concept of Mashiach. Tiferes refers to the concept, it's not your test, Tavis, it's just Shvat, sorry. Okay. So that's a different one then. Okay. So in a sicha that Rebbe was talking about, and in late Tavshin and Aleph, it was Parshas Matas Masei. So we'd read about the Membeis Masois. So the Parshas, we've already finished all the Membeis Masois in the Midbar Amin. Yechezkel, he mentions in Perek Chof, he gives a long nevuah about how the Jewish people have throughout the generations have angered Hashem, and Hashem always had Rachmanis on them in order not to create a Chil Hashem. So at the end, Yechezkel describes over there there's going to be a point when the Jewish people have to go through Midbar Amin, and then they're going to come out of there to Gola Midbar Shlema, where Midbar Amim, Rashi mentions that it means there was the actual Midbar Sinai is called Midbar Amim because it was bordered by several nations, and it means the Midbar of Golos. So by now, we've already gone through the 42 Masois in the Midbar Amim. We're already at Al Yaudin Yerichai, Ve'eva the Yaudin Yerichai Kedma Mizracha, where it talks about in Chassidus what Yaudin represents and what Yerichai represents. Yerichai in particular represents V'arichai V'yiras Hashem, the fact that Mashiach is going to judge people with a sense of smell. So I mean, we're already all ready for that. Miyad Mamash. Beginning a new simon in Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, we're talking about the dinim of a yeledes, a woman who's given or about to give birth. So as soon as a woman is in labor, then you right away call the doctor or the midwife or whatever. A woman who's giving birth in general is considered like a chola sheyesh bei sakana. So just like we learned in the previous simon, then we're mechal Shabbos for whatever is necessary. To the extent that we can do through a shinui or through a goy, then the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch says that you should do it. The Alter Rebbe actually doesn't mention that point, so it's mashma according to him that if you treat it like any, literally like a chola sheyesh bei sakana. The definition of that is either when she starts going into labor, when blood starts flowing, or when she can't walk by herself, and also if she miscarries after 40 days since her last tefillah, then it's also the baby by that time is formed enough that it's considered a birth for various purposes in halacha, including for this one that she's considered a yeletus.
That can't bring that up to that halacha.
What?
He himself, Yom Kippur, went to the oldest.
Yeah, Alter Rebbe himself, that's true, went and then chopped wood. And, well, she had already given birth, then that's different. Here we're talking about she's about to give birth. But yeah, I guess it's a similar kind of thing, yeah.